Greetings, this is Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur, and in today's episode of the podcast, I'm talking with Johanna Beekman, who is a multi-genre recording artist. She has a background in gospel. She's also a chant leader. She writes beautiful and inspiring English lyrics as a songwriter. She is a yoga teacher. She leads retreats. She teaches voice lessons. She coordinates women into these beautiful spiritual Lilith Fair events called Shakti United, as well as raising money for girls in Nepal. She really does so many aspects of this spiritual path. She's really fun to talk to. I found out that she is also a coach in the tradition of Byron Katie. So we did a little compare and contrast of coaching styles, which was totally unexpected. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to subscribe and comment so that other people can know about this, and feel free to share it. Stay tuned until the end of the podcast to listen to Johanna's newest track, Om Gurudeva, from her album Mantra Soul. It's really beautiful. Don't miss it. All right, here we go.
Yeah, I just kind of do this like a conversation. I think it's cool for people to hear what it's like to actually have conversations with the people that they listen to.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
So what would you like to talk about?
Well, I was going to say it was really fun singing with you at the Northwest Yoga Conference. That was the last time we saw each other.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed how our paths have continuously kind of crossed this kind of sacred geometry thing, you know?
We're just
going around the circle of the beautiful sacred music and seeing each other here and there and dropping into that kind of Shakti vibe. And I'm just so grateful that we got to sing together and welcome you to the Great Northwest. It was really, really nice to have you.
Yeah, it was so sweet of you to include me. I really enjoyed it. And to get to sing for the first time in my new location. So that was
Really cool. And you're just such a beautiful singer. I remember a couple of times they put us back to back at Shakti Fest and Bhakti Fest. Mm-hmm. And I just really loved your vibe. And then I went off with my gospel kirtan thing, you know, right after. And it's just, we have this yin yang, you know, I've got my yin music and I love that. And it's my meditation and it's my practice and it's so beautiful. But when I get on a main stage at Bhakti Fest or Shakti Fest, my old gospel singer roots come out and kind of get really big. So I love the juxtaposition of our sets when we did get to do that.
Yeah.
Embody this lovely motherly maternal archetype kind of with your music.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful because you are a mother and you've got that beautiful kind of sweetness to the way that you deliver the medicine. And
Thank you. Well, actually, on that note, because I am a mother and I always brought my kids to Bhakti and Shakti Fest, I never got to see anyone. So I would like leave right after my set. So actually the first time I heard you was when you came to Phoenix and I was totally blown away. It's nice to sing with people who have nice voices, you know, but like sometimes you'll meet somebody who you just, it just sounds so cohesive together, you know, like the harmonics just match up in like a really special way. And so that's how I feel about our voices. So
I feel the same way. I really, really gravitate towards women who have voices that are different than mine, you know, and who embody the female in a different way. And I was so inspired. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that because just this morning I had this thought, this kind of visceral experience of, oh, Sirgun and I should really sing together and like do a single or something, you know, like it had already happened. I was like, but we already did that because I just had this, it was so natural.
Well, because, cool.
I do love the resonance of the way that our voices just kind of interweave and create this beautiful archetype of something that could be like kind of a womb, you know, something that could hold you, you know. That's the experience that I feel when we're singing together, that we kind of weave in and out of the harmonies, and we're intuitively just kind of following the flow of spirit.
Yeah.
And it's intuitive juxtaposition between our voices as well, because I have this real guttural gospel background growing up, you know, singing with Dr. Isaiah Jones, rest in peace, you know, in the Interfaith Gospel Choir. You know, I got all of that. And I love bringing that to sacred music, because that's my faith, is, you know, it's big and it's also small and delicious and, you know, yin and dark and cool and all of these things. So it feels like a really natural expression when I sing with women like you that embody that, you know, a little bit of a lighter. I have a Scorpio Western astrology, so that, you know, though there is darkness, there is light. Though there is human, you are human, you are divine. Though there are shadows inside every breath you breathe in light. There's some lyrics of my song. It really kind of is my take on spirituality and our way through this path of life, is accepting all of it as God. And breathing through even the painful moments, and singing those minor dirges when it comes, you know, and being in that. Mm-hmm. And then where can we find that light and transform that dirge into something celebratory and, you know, gracious and big and open and expansive, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is the internal to the external. It's like this internal practice that you and I are doing that, you know, it's a beautiful, at least for me, it's this lifeline, really. And it's the center and it's the source. And then to bring that and bring it out into the public, and to share that while we are singers and performers. I think you were in music in college, right? And I was in theater and in musical theater. And right. Yeah. So, and you did electronic music, right? I think you mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah. I did some like experimental, not electronic in the sense of like club music, but like, you know, John Cage type, like, is this really music sort of stuff.
Yeah. I love that.
Which is cool. It gave me a background in recording, which I really appreciate.
That's amazing. Yeah. And as a female artist, that's such a powerful thing to have. You know, in this industry, it's very male dominated, especially in that part of it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So yeah, and I know just enough to like do what I don't feel comfortable yet, like making an entire, you know, album. Like I don't mix it or anything, but I at least know how to record my vocals, and like I could mix it, but I wouldn't be very, you know. I'd like to get some pointers before I kind of embark on that. But so far I haven't needed it. You know, that's the other thing, is if you know people who, and you like working with people who do it better than you, then, you know, let them do that. And then you just bring what you do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's empowering to be able to track your things the way that you would like them to be. Mm-hmm. And also empowering to work with the right mixing and mastering engineers who have a similar vision and can help propel it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel very fortunate to, you know, to work with Ben Leinbach continuously. And I just continue to choose that because he's the best of the best in our genre. Mm-hmm. And then Hans Christian is another person that I always use to master, who's out in the Midwest and has been doing it for so long. And he's so tuned into the sacred music. It's really just, it's beautiful to see how the artistry really propels through collaboration.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting about Ben Leinbach, actually. I really loved, I didn't realize that he'd done your album, so that makes sense, but.
He did the last two, and he mixed the first one, because I was more of the producer on that one. I was more of my mantra music. I have albums before, but Heartbeats One, yeah, was more of like my big, you know, 2-year birthing process, and he mixed it and Hans mastered it, and I used him and Benji Wertheimer and Garish and some other people who have fingers in production to kind of help with production consultation on that project. And then I moved over to just Ben because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I cut you off. What was that?
No, I'm not sure. I don't know that I was saying
anything. Yeah, it's just interesting because but I used him because those albums, oh, that it has that sound, maybe you were saying, the Ben Linebach sound.
Yeah, well, I just remember hearing Prajna's album, and I actually had the actual CD, so I saw his name. That's the other thing, is you don't really know who's on people's albums in the day and age of streaming and MP3s, which I had an idea about, but anyway, I really loved the production on that album, and so now that you're saying that your albums were, because I really love the production on your albums as well.
It's interesting you mentioned
the difference.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that album, because I was working on my mantra music, and I'd had this wake up call. Some of my history of how I ended up in the mantra world. I was a musician, and I toured, and I did all of this, and I don't normally share this on podcasts and things, but I've been sober for 15 years next year.
Okay.
And I spent my 23rd birthday in treatment, and over the course of my healing from that, I had been introduced to, you know, yoga in high school, and then I was touring with my music, which I'd always done, but I was touring in places where there's alcohol, and I haven't drank for, you know, and I was watching people get further away from spirit while I was getting closer to spirit as I sang, because it's always been that way with this beautiful medicine of music. And so I quit music. I just said, I'm done with this. I'm becoming a yoga teacher. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do it the way that it's happening. It's not feeding my soul. It's taking away from my livelihood, and my prana is being depleted, really. And so I walked away, got certified in some crazy, you know, power vinyasa, did all of the other yogas before. And I just got really excited about the whole yoga package. Even though I'd been introduced to it, I hadn't gone deep into my practice. And so getting sober and doing this and making that intention was amazing. I was hit by a drunk driver a year after my training. I'd been teaching tons of crazy, you know, pretzel yoga all over the place. And the doctors say, you can't practice yoga.
Oh my gosh.
And so I went back to, I'd been introduced to chanting through Krishna Das and Ram Das as a teenager, and I went to my chanting practice. And I had been trained in restorative and all of these subtle body and breath work things in my obsession with yoga. And so I went to fusing these practices with the music, and I healed myself. And so it's been a profound transition from, while music was always medicine, from one kind of music and medicine, you know, while it was always medicine for me, it wasn't being received in the way that it needed to be, right? And I wasn't, it wasn't medicine for me in the way that it was being communicated. Mm-hmm. And so spirit gave me this, and I was already working on this mantra music album kind of when that happened, because I'd gotten obsessed with Kirtan again. And so during that healing process, I also developed those songs for Heartbeats One and recorded that album and started working with all of these people we've been talking about. And, you know, got a call from Girish randomly, will you tour with me and, you know, play harmonium while I was recording Heartbeats One. And then I was like, well, do you think you could sing on my song? You know, so it was just, you know, the way the Dharma path kind of unfolds without, you know, any effort. Just, it feels like, you know, I was working, but it was my path. It wasn't work.
Yeah.
It's the nectar, the amrita. Anyway, so I kind of skipped around. So I was at Prana Fest. I got invited to be at Prana Fest, and my album was, you know, almost done, or I was working on it, and I met Ben and Pragnia. It was 2014, 13, 12, somewhere in there, when their album had just dropped. And I heard them, and I saw them perform their songs from that album, and I got the album. And Benji Wertheimer says, hey, how about this Ben Linebach guy during this whole unfolding of the Dharma path? I'm like, what? He would work with me? You know, the way that, you know, we didn't realize started on this path, how small these genres are and how deep of a beautiful connected family it really is.
Right.
So yeah, that album was a huge inspiration. The fusion of the East with the West is really, I heard that and some other mantra music artists. And as a songwriter, I heard the music and I realized that it is the medicine for me beyond what I'd heard from Krishna Das and Ram Das, which is a practice, it's fine, but it hadn't inspired me.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I love that about your songs, that because the English lyrics are they're used like you would song, like they would in a song, right? It's not like another English, you know, four-word sentence that is used like a mantra, but you actually have these like really beautiful, powerful lyrics.
Right. Yeah. And it's, and that actually my intention with that is really to give people, whether or not they know what they're singing, a feeling of what the mantra is doing. You know, it's like there's these, and to give an access point for people who don't necessarily hear, you know, Indian kirtan or mantra music as, you know, beautiful in this culture, the scales that we're using and the chords are sometimes like a little crunchy to the Western ear.
Right.
And so my intention is to give an access point so that as many people can open up to mantra as possible in the West and start practicing themselves. Please, you know, please heal yourselves and get this nectar, because there's so many different kinds of people. All the snowflakes, they're all different, as we know. Yeah. So different people are going to react to different things. And some people, of course, I have conversations about appropriation and all of that. I have a women's studies degree with a focus on diversity education. It's really important to me to give back. Mm-hmm. And appropriation is real. Mm-hmm. I get that. So I fundraise for girls in Nepal and I do what I can. And I know that I've received so much from these cultures and I try to honor that as much as possible in my own way. Might not be okay with someone else who comes from a more traditional stance. So it's an interesting dance. I love that about your music as well. And you're more in the, in different kinds of mantras. You're singing in a different language, primarily Gurmukhi, which is a beautiful language. And what I really, really love about those mantras is the translations, is that there's a little bit more girth to what you're speaking in English when you speak the translation. So that's why I've kind of added in those chants, and also All Paths Up the Mountain to Leads to the Same Place. But that those, like on the lighted side, the one that I quoted earlier,
right,
the only English other than that verse is the translation of the chant over the chant being sung. So then if it's your native tongue, sing the translation, you know, do what is your medicine, what is your mantra medicine, right? Do you coach? You coach people, correct? With spirituality, or what is your coaching? I just got out of a vocal lesson, so I'm always curious what other artists are doing with their clients, you know?
Yeah, I started doing kind of my own program last year, and then I met a man who channels. Are you familiar with Abraham? Sort of like the same principle with, like, Esther channels Abraham, Gary channels Joshua. Fell in love with these teachings. And so I joined his boot camp as a coach. And so that's what I do. So basically I help guide, well, I help answer people's questions as they're going through this process. Mm-hmm. And the process is like to look at our entire, like all of the events that are happening in our life through a higher perspective. So if something is seeming like stuck or negative or something, to be able to train your mind to flip it and look at it in a different way, that it's, you know, that it's serving you, and you know, how else we could look at this. So
yeah,
it's a perspective shift.
That's so interesting, because I work with my vocal clients and I use the work of Byron Katie.
Oh yeah. Yes. It's very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds very similar. So like this client that I just finished with has his, basically his esophagus is stapled to his diaphragm.
Okay.
So we're really working with these physical somatic experiences that he's having in his body of tension in his throat and his vishuddha being shut down, his vocal chakra being shut down because of these beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So stemming from a physical problem.
Right, right.
So it's so interesting when we use these tools to unpack these thoughts that are causing us suffering, whatever they are, because that's really the root of suffering, Taoism, Buddhism. Like, just look at all of these paths. You know, what is causing the suffering? It's the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mantra, mind protection, you know? So, you know, using these tools to unpack these thoughts and then turn the thoughts around into something that can be used for positive. And, you know, again, it's perspective. What are we doing that is limiting our beliefs, ourselves, our expansive potential and nature, our true nature in this world? And where are we shutting down, whether it's vocally or spiritually, intellectually? What has been diminished by all of this that's flying around, and how can we bring it back to center?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Very similar. The Byron Katie work is exciting because they discovered, you know, like between she and Eckhart Tolle, it was sort of like, if you read the, you know, the, what's his books called? The Power of Now. Right. And then there's a new one, you know, you read it and you're like, all right, but how do I do this? You know,
right.
and then Byron Katie is like, well, here's how you do that. So, yeah. what we do is very similar. It's like, how do you do this? Yes, this is how it's a moment to moment thing. And and they actually talk about how the body is sort of this last resort. You know, like if you're not getting it, you're not getting it, you're not getting it. Life keeps showing, you know, the limitation to you, the limiting belief. They talk about that. And so the body is this last resort. It's the thing you're not going to ignore, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least when it gets big. Yeah.
Indeed. It's so profound when we get into these. There are so many tools that are similar to do the same thing, you know, because it's all the same problem. And that's the other thing about the work of Byron Katie is that she's talking. I spent actually when I was 23 during that healing process, I was trained in the work of Byron Katie. I went through a certification.
Oh, neat.
Years cleanse in Los Angeles, met my teacher for the last, you know, 15 years, you know, and so to watch someone work with one person on stage and to be able to do the work with 500 people in the audience on the exact same issue or similar issue that can be applied is so profound. It really shows you something about universal consciousness.
Which is a
unique story.
Yeah. Mind sharing just something like something specific about that? I feel like that would be sort of fun to know about, like something you either brought up or somebody brought up or.
Right. So, say a mother, I'm going to give an example of something that maybe I could identify with, even though I'm not a mother.
Okay.
So say you're on stage and you're talking with Byron Katie about, my child doesn't listen to me. I'm so frustrated. Then you do this worksheet about, you know, and it's really petty about everything that you're thinking about your child and what that belief causes for you somatically. Like, where does it hit you in the body when you believe that thought? How do you react when you think that thought? You know, how do you treat yourself? How do you treat others? This is just, I'm breaking down each question. And then you're doing that about your daughter on stage, and I'm watching you say, so is it true that my daughter doesn't listen to me? Would be the first question. So I'm going to do it with you. Is it true that your daughter doesn't listen to you when she's, do you have an example of something like that in your life recently?
Let's see. Well, I have a son.
Your son or what?
I'm just so that it's a little bit, I don't know, feels more personal. Everyone thinks he's a daughter. Let's see, what does he not listen to me about? I'll give him his toothbrush and I'll tell him to brush his teeth. And then like 10 minutes later, he's still holding it. He doesn't brush his teeth.
Right. So then is it true that your son doesn't listen to you? I would ask you that. And then you'd think about that.
Only in, not all the time. He listens to me sometimes. He didn't listen to me about the toothbrush. Eventually, he brushed his teeth.
So is it absolutely true that he doesn't listen to you when you're speaking?
No.
Okay. So how do you react when you think that thought? That my son's not listening to me. He's not going to brush his teeth.
I get aggravated. I get tense.
Right, Right. And then how do you treat him when you're aggravated and you're tense?
Hurriedly. And like I try to rush him and like I
believe he's not going to brush his teeth.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to find the word. I can't think of the word, but like I don't know. I try to rush him, I guess. What's the, yeah. Not gently.
Yeah. Not with kid gloves, so to speak.
Yeah. I'm sort of making this up, but yeah. for the purpose of this exercise.
So I'm on the other side listening to you do this work about your son, not listening to you. Brushing his teeth. And I'm thinking about, I'm making this up also, my boyfriend, who I live with, say, and he always leaves the toilet seat up, and I've asked him 10,000 times, and I ask him again, you know, the night before, will you be sure to leave the toilet seat down? And he didn't listen to me, and the next morning, sure enough, when I go to pee, it's up. Oh, and I'm so frustrated. So I'm watching you do the work about your child, and I'm applying it to my boyfriend who didn't do the thing. And then I'm thinking, how do I react when I think that thought? How do I treat him? I treat him like crap. I'm mad at him. I'm stomping around and I'm not saying what I'm mad about, but I'm clearly upset. I'm treating him like I don't love him, or I'm not appreciating him making me breakfast after he does that.
Right.
You know, I'm stuck in the other moment. Right. So while you're doing the work on that, I'm doing my work. Okay. So then we, how do you react when you think that thought? Who would you be without that thought that your son isn't listening to you?
Oh, I'd be happy.
Right.
Carefree.
Right. You'd be happy. You'd be carefree. You'd be in your business. Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be so concerned about what he's, because there's three kinds of business also in this work: my business, your business, and God's business.
Right.
So if I'm over there in his business about brushing his teeth and thinking about that, I'm not over here with my other child taking care of them, right? Right. Or I'm not with myself in my business, which is doing the bills to get the thing on the table to do the thing, which we have to do as a mother also, right? Yeah. So then we turn the thought around. Who would you be without that story? That my son isn't listening to me. My son doesn't listen to me.
Yeah, I would feel a lot better.
Turn the thought around
We did that. What was the other one?
So then we find an example. So we turn the thought around. My son isn't listening to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, turn, like, when he does listen to me?
So what is the opposite of that? Yeah, my son does listen to me.
So
then you find three genuine examples of how that statement, my son does listen to me, could be as true or truer than the original statement. My son doesn't
listen. When I call his name, he generally answers. Mm-hmm. Let's see. When does he listen to me? He's listened, you know, he's sort of incorporated the listening into his life, right? Like, he knows how to put on his own pants, and he knows how to brush his own teeth because he's listened to me, you know, or observed that I've shown him. The fact that he even brushes his teeth now is proof that he listens to me, because he used to not want to brush his teeth. It used to be a, you know, so yeah.
Right. Yeah. So does your son listen to you?
Yes.
Hey. So, you know, in a session, I might apply that to some vocalization and working with the Vishuddha chakra. Where did it shut down? Where did we become closed off? Where was that moment that we felt blocked, whether it's in, you know, in grade school, in choir, or, you know, your mom said you sang off key, or, you know, any one of these traumatic moments that blocked us off from our true source and our ability to deliver the medicine of our heart. Right? And that's the chakra that's the most shut down in this culture. We're just
land on, you
know, zero voices in the halls, you know.
Yeah, you're a mom.
I don't have children, so yeah. I can't tell you how it
starts. I actually just put my oldest in elementary school yesterday for the first time ever. So I only ever heard that Zero Voices thing for the first time yesterday because he really wanted to check out the breakfast at the elementary school, and there's like a no talking policy during breakfast.
Right. So while from a mindfulness standpoint, we might be like, oh, how cool, there's no talking during
breakfast.
At the same time, how would a child react to that Zero Voices?
Right.
You know, then we're going back to children are seen, not heard. Where did we hear that before? Was that helpful for your mom and my mom and dad? I don't know. You also mentioned the, did you mention the Four Agreements?
No, I haven't, but I'm also familiar with that. Yeah, that's a great, it's all sort of you know, interrelated. Like they're not contradictory, but it's like different frameworks. Yeah.
Right. It's all frameworks for doing the same thing, which is, you know, good.
Yeah. I find like what you were going through that, you know, like the list of questions is very similar to how the Joshua work is. You know, you name the event and then the emotion and the belief system that's behind it and all that. So I like that process of going through like a worksheet. I find that that's really helpful. Different than, so like the Four Agreements, I wonder if he does have like, does he have like a worksheet to go through? Because knowing those four things, I feel like is different than actually, you know, knowing how to apply them.
Exactly. Actually, I have some friends that I have a little tribe in an attempt to be more grounded in the Northwest. I've like cultivated friendships over the years.
Oh, nice.
Months off of tour, you know?
Yeah.
But one of the things that was just brought up was reading that book as a group. And so I might just come up with a worksheet if there isn't. I've already read it, but I haven't circled back for a while. So
yeah, that would be really great.
Would you have 5 minutes to put me through your kind of process that you do?
Oh yeah, sure. Okay, so you'd start with what they would call a manifestation event. So anything that brought up a strong emotion, and for this purpose, let's do like a negative one. So an event that caused you to feel something unpleasant.
Well, I just went to, I bought this brand new RV, sold my house last year on my way home from the spring, fall tour. It was November. I'm driving through North Dakota. I took another northern route because I was finishing an album up there. Maybe it's 2 years ago with Hans Christian. He was doing some tracking. Anyway, I'm driving across and I hit a blizzard, and I'm an Oregonian and I don't know how to drive in the snow.
Oh, wow.
And I had a brand new RV.
Oh.
That I just sold my house to get. So it's all figured out now, but that moment was what it came up, was that it was like kind of a trauma that put me like, oh, where's my root chakra? This is my home, you know, and then I have to limp along. So is that a good example of a...
Yeah, that's great. So the event is that you totally
wrecked,
wrecked your car. Okay. Or your RV.
My house. RV. Yeah.
You wrecked your house. Okay. So name the emotion that brought up.
Fear and loss and displacement.
Okay. Fear's good.
Fear is the stronger one. Yeah.
So here, let me get out my thing because for whatever reason I'm not remembering. I think the next one is okay. So obviously you recognize this is either a positive or negative emotion. Which one is that you would choose? So you would
choose positive.
Okay. And then you would look at what the initial thoughts you attracted as a result. So the idea is that you don't create thought, you attract it based on your vibration.
Right.
So what sorts of thoughts were running through your head as this happened?
I'm going to have to leave my RV here or fly home. I'm not going to be able to drive home. I won't be able to get home.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, you know? I won't be able to get home. It'll be hard. I'm going to be stuck, stranded in a blizzard, run out of propane.
Did you?
Whatever. You know, so I went to like the worst case scenario.
Yeah. And into the future. And so did you have an urge to change the conditions or the people involved? Like, did you wish that it was different? Or, yeah. Okay. So what would you have done? What were the urges?
Keep driving, even though my car's just to get home at 25 miles an hour, because I know it can go that fast. The urge, so that's fight or flight. I went straight in flight, you know, in my nervous system, which isn't a good place to be, or into despair, like, oh, I'll just stay here through Thanksgiving and live in Walmart parking lot across from the place where they might be able to fix it in 2 weeks and whatever, I'm gonna, you know. So kind of between the two.
Fun to look at how insane our minds are. If left to its own devices, right?
Right, so catastrophize.
Yeah. Did you take action on those urges?
No. I mean, I did it. I slowed my mind down and I, you know, slept. I went to the dealership across the street. I checked it out, saw if it would be okay for me to drive at 25 miles an hour across this country. Mm-hmm. And I did it. You know, but I did it in the right succession.
Okay. So if you had taken an action on that urge, the next question would be, if so, what was the result of taking that action? Usually it's not so great, because when we react to something, you know, in fear, it doesn't usually turn out the best.
I could have blown up my engine and driven too fast, not knowing that it was a problem with the air take, whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that is very similar. That's really good.
Yeah. So then you would look at what, if you can identify the limiting belief that triggered that emotion.
The limiting belief that triggered that emotion is that I need a vehicle for my home, root chakra, safety, all of that.
Right. That your sense of security is linked to this vehicle. Security,
safety, stability is a cocoon of my own on the road. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the limiting belief was that I wouldn't be able to choose something other than having that safe space, travel home with me with all of my things.
Right.
From a long tour, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you I could have flown back, left it there. It probably would have been fine. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I keep hearing like a, well, not keep, but it's the second time. It's like a beep, maybe like from an instant messaging or something.
You know, I think it's, here, let me close my mail application. I tried silencing my whole thing when that happened. I think that'll work.
Okay.
It was my mail application was open. Thank you for mentioning that, because mute was not the right option.
And it's so, sorry, so my, this is a little long. So is the belief limiting or beneficial? Obviously.
It is limiting.
So in this system, if the belief is beneficial, it's true. If the belief is limiting, it's false. So is the belief true or false?
It's false.
False.
Everything is fine.
Yeah. So then you would try to, so very similar to the Byron Katie thing, then you would try to find evidence to prove that this limiting belief is false. You could.
I kind of already did that. I could get home. I would have flown.
Yeah. Then you would see how it was for your benefit. And then you would kind of go through this other series of questions. So yeah. Yeah.
That's so amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun that you find, and I'm sure you find this too, that like when you actually like write these things down or at least go through them in your head, it's a lot different than just going, okay, I'm over it. You know, and you like just kind of push it aside, you know?
Yeah. And I actually find, I don't know if you find this as a long-term practitioner of this kind of work, but I find myself sometimes skipping to the turnaround or to the, you know, like we did in this conversation, I was like, well, actually I would have been fine because da 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 da.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm shortchanging the work sometimes in myself, which is, you know, going into that moment. Instead, I'm like, oh, that moment's over. It's just a, you know, I've been doing this since I was 23. It's, you know, I'll just turn it around. It's fine. That is not the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like jumping to the end, it's just like any practice. It's like we need to practice, learn the basics, and then we get better. But if we jump to having a hit song on the Grammys and whatever, you know, first out of the gate, I mean, I don't know how Billie Eilish is feeling right now, but it's by the fourth Grammy, she was like, I'm in the world on time. I love these other artists. They deserve this.
No, you know what that was? Because my sister-in-law is like obsessed with following artists and stuff, is that because she's in the generation of like Instagram and everyone's on Instagram all the time, she was petrified that all these other artists' fans were going to like crucify her. Isn't that sad? So she wasn't enjoying that moment. I know.
Wow.
And apparently Alicia Keys told her, she's like, be in your, what was it? Be in your moment, or like be in your greatness or something like that. You know, she's like, enjoy this moment, you know.
Speaking of Alicia Keys, as a practitioner in the spiritual world, I was just, she's amazing.
She's so amazing. Yeah.
I mean, you could see her practice when she held space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if all of us were, you know, I don't know what her practice is.
She does Kundalini yoga. She does
Kundalini yoga. Oh my gosh.
With Guru Jagat in Venice.
That's why. That's why. I was like, she's, only what is her practice?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's the only thing she does, but I know that she does do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you could see that she has a spiritual practice, and she was holding space for America to meditate for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you, when she said, this is for Kobe, I want us all to take a moment. And then she brought out Boys to Men, and everyone was silent for that entire song.
Yeah.
She gave people something to focus on and be quiet. Mm-hmm. I was just really profoundly impacted with seeing that on national television.
Yeah. And she does it in a way where it's like people want it, but they don't realize what they're getting exactly, I think, you know?
That's what I loved about it. That's kind of what I think about kind of slipping in mantra music to something that sounds really, really nice. It's like, oh, we want it, but we don't know we want it yet, but we like that sound. Let's have more of that. Oh, it's another language. Oh, the vibration feels good, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I also so appreciate how like non-competitive she is. She feels so like comfortable in her own, you know, talent, and also like totally willing to boost other people up, you know?
Yeah. And I love that. And that's really something I love about coming back to the world that we've been running in, is this sweetness of how we can work together and play together and sing together and co-create. And, you know, there's not a lot of opportunity, you know, there's just a few of our circles gatherings, right? But we're all supporting it, hopefully, and lifting each other up if we're in our practice. That's really my intention. I've, you know, like with the Shakti United gatherings, I think I'll be doing another one next year too, where I fundraise for girls in Nepal's education and bring together female artists in collaboration and only female fronted bands. And men are there taking tickets. There's work, maybe a workshop on empowered masculinity from in a standpoint of in a feminist world, how can we show up and support this shift that's happening with the matriarchy coming back potentially, right? You know, and experiencing the somatic experience of what Shakti is when we bring these powerful goddesses together in song, and how it transforms the vibration of a space, you know. And it's, so anyway, it's just, it's really powerful when we can let our egos go, to hear each other.
Yeah.
Because root chakra, if we're talking about Ganesha in Hinduism, you know, he's got those big ears to listen with. That's where we start.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love, again, honoring the artistry that you're bringing into the world, hearing other beautiful women who are holding deep space and receiving that medicine is so inspiring.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a really like pivotal moment last year while I was actually going through this boot camp, because I'm not sure where it came from, but I had like some jealousy around, you know, other people, like how I saw other people succeeding, doing what I was doing, and being like, why am I not, you know, and just the comparison, like the, you know, the disease comparison. And it confused me because, you know, I was like, it's not like I needed anything, or, you know, but it, anyway, so it was something that I processed. And I came to this like profound realization of everyone's uniqueness And once I realized that, you know, that how everybody just provides something so unique that,
yeah,
that there could be thousands of people doing almost exactly what I do, but it would be their unique version of it. And no one is, you know, there's no comparison, you know?
Right. It's absolutely profound when you think about it that way. It's so beautiful that we're all singing in these worlds. I mean, I'm singing more English now. I'm working on an English album, but in this world of mantra music that we're all singing potentially the same exact words.
Yeah, that too, huh? Yeah.
And it's delivered so differently. And one different human will receive Om Namah Shivaya in one way is, wow, that's my medicine. And it's that long, you know, 9-count breath, traditional Om Namah Shivaya. Or someone's doing an Om Namah Shivaya like CeCe White, where she's jumping up and down and doing her thing, which I'm somewhere in between sometimes, I think, I'd like to think, but you know, and that's the medicine maybe for the same person, but they're dancing at that moment and that's their practice, you know? And in the Sikh tradition, those mantras are so deep and profound.
Yeah.
And I love the length and the cadence of how they're spoken. And I like that the rhythms of the melodies, you know, when I was writing some of these songs in Gurmukhi, it was very hard because I would write a melody, but then I'd be like, wait, no, that's not the right cadence. I have to shift that beat a little bit back, you know?
Yeah.
Real artistry to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really like your Ajja Alad, the Beyond Love track, because you like totally got the rhythm of that thing in your own, you know, in your own way. And those mantras, particularly the ones that were written by Guru Gobind Singh, they have this sort of like da 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 sort of rhythm to them. And so it's not like they lose anything if you don't do it, but they, I don't know, there's something about it.
There's a heartbeat to everything.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything in the world, right? But there's a specific meter to that. That feels like something that's really lovely to sink into, and like that heartbeat of your mother. And
then yeah.
The heartbeat, well, where is the heartbeat going to express itself musically throughout our lives? Is what I like to kind of think. I'm going to Brighton Bush Hot Springs this weekend to lead a retreat called Rhythm Asana, where we play with yoga and dance and drumming, and we teach people African drums. And I had an African drum bass band in high school that I sang in and did, you know, kind of music, and I did pop music, and I did, you know, wineries. I did the whole thing over the years. But so it's really fun because we do live world music from all cultures. So we do some things in, you know, in all of these different traditions, and we're teaching people this fonga welcoming drumming pattern. And there's a chant, oh, fonga lafia, and it's a welcoming chant, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's, and I think about that with this particular workshop that we do, it's about the rhythms of ourselves, right? And our rhythms of ourselves in nature, because we're out at this beautiful hot spring with the trees and working with the internal and external rhythms to kind of bring ourselves into balance through sound healing, mantra music, and all of that. I do a lullaby yoga session. And I think we've been talking about this. There's just so many modalities to get in to the heart and to the center. And any human is going to receive that, these modalities in a different way. So it's just so sweet to see the unfolding and where different people, you know, like with the 8 limbs of yoga, what limb of these 8? And then it's actually just these vast ripples of awareness that we can dive into. Is any human going to gravitate towards? What mantra is any human? It's all so personal.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And it's so profound.
So you do the lullaby yoga, you do your kirtan, you do this retreat. Is there anything else that you're doing this year?
I'm dropping an album. The Mantra Soul album is finally completing in the next month.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm heading out on tour with that to the Festival of Colors tour. I've been doing that Holy High Celebration tour for some years.
Ross Jaffe's going to that too, right?
Yeah. We've been kind of three of the 4 or 5 years I've been there, we've both been there, and we kind of make this Maha Mantra band between his music and my music, mm-hmm. and then grab everyone and get really big. And I feel like my role and his role in that has been kind of that kind of east to west gap, you know, bridging it, because it's like 40,000 Krishnas and Mormons in Utah at Spanish Fork is the biggest one that we're going to do March 31st.
And a lot of
people. The Gospel Kirtan. Yeah, it's a lot of people.
A lot of Mormons actually come to that?
Like, oh, yeah.
Really?
It's $5 and people go in and it's a celebration of the Holy High where you throw these chalk colors in the air, mm-hmm. and all ages are welcome. So a lot of Mormons come and it's this big celebration that all the Utah people know about as a family friendly event at the Krishna temple there.
Oh, wow.
And they've built another Krishna temple in Salt Lake City. And I think part of what we're doing is fundraising for that, which is the ISKCON movement, which is beautiful. It's one of the biggest bhakti yoga movements in the West. Mm-hmm. While I don't subscribe to that as my primary practice, it's awesome mm-hmm. to hang out with them.
Yeah.
And do. Yeah. So I do lullaby yoga, I do kirtan, and sometimes I do this gospel-infused kirtan where I'm, you know, I crowd surf and stuff at that festival. It's crazy. It's a lot of, like, teenagers and that kind of energy. It's a lot of fun. Uh-huh. And then I do a soothing the spirit of the world meditative mantra chanting class that we just did at the Northwest Yoga Conference, where we unpack kind of the technology of what we're doing behind these mantras. And you know, there's 84 mouth meridians and what we're doing and with our tongues and what we're doing with the sounds and how the vibration hits our bodies. And so we work a little bit with that, and then we practice and give people practices with mudras and mantras that kind of can give them a home source to go within. So that's really sweet. It's a little bit harder to teach at Bhakti and Shakti Fest and where there's loud everything, you know? but yeah, so I do, those are my primary things that I'm offering these days. And it's just a lovely path. I'm very grateful.
Cool. Well, we have a few more minutes. So I just thought if you wanted to say anything about the track that you sent me, because I'm going to play it at the end, then just tell us how people can get in touch with you or find you online.
Sounds great. Well, my website is johannasings.com. You can email us at info@johannasings for anything. That's my team when I'm on the road. So if you want me to come sing for you, I'm there. And Instagram is Johanna Beekman. Facebook, Johanna Beekman Music. And I would love to hear from you. This is a brand new track produced by Ben Leinbach. And this is actually I've been working on that track. That track's been completed. I've been working on this album for almost 5 years, the Mantra Soul album. I was kind of waiting and doing other things. So this has been completed for a while. It's a track to the light and the guru within. Om Guru Deva. So Om, the primordial sound of the universe, creation and all living things, Guru, Gu being dark, and Ru meaning light, and Deva, shining divine. So we're awakening the shining divine teacher that lives within us all. And this particular track is actually available already on Bandcamp, so you can actually buy it. So that's from the Mantra Soul album. I'm working on that album and Spirit Song Soul, which will be released in 2021. And that is English and inspirational music. And it's going to be a really beautiful conscious music album featuring a song called Free to Decide that the Unitarian Fellowship churches have been buying and all these choirs have been buying for years, and having their choirs do the thing. So it's been to gala and all of these different places, and it's time to breathe new life into this Free to Decide Breathe track. So you can actually support that GoFundMe online as well. Spirit Song Soul GoFundMe.
Cool. So I'll put a lot of those links in the description box so y'all can click on it. And it was so great to be able to speak with you, Johanna.
Yeah, thank you, Sirgan.
Yeah, have a wonderful rest of your day.
I hope you do too. Blessings on your journey, sister. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Om Gurudeva.